Listening to the Hour of the Time. I'm your host, William Cooper. Fable of Isis and Osiris, as it has descended to us in the account given by Plutarch, has not been greatly amplified by any modern research. The Egyptian fragments, which have been translated in recent years, offer no complete account of the birth, life, death, and resurrection of Osiris, nor has any new key been found to unlock this great drama, which may well be termed the Passion Play of Egypt. It is not our intention to perpetuate Plutarch's account merely for its outward appearance, but rather from the same motive that inspired Synesius, Platonic philosopher and Christian bishop, to compile his account of the same fabulous history. Synesius, in his treatise on Providence, and you hear that word a lot in the secret societies and especially in Freemasonry, thus introduces the Osirian myth. Quote, "This fable is Egyptian. The Egyptians transcend in wisdom. Perhaps, therefore, this also being a fable, obscurely signifies something more than a fable, because it is Egyptian. If, however, it is not a fable, but a sacred discourse, it will deserve in a still greater degree to be told and committed to writing." Unquote. In presenting a summary of Plutarch's account, I am omitting nothing which could in any way be regarded as relevant. I am taking the liberty, however, of somewhat expanding the fable by incorporating therein some small fragments derived from other Greek writers, and occasionally a few words bearing upon the account from fragments of Egyptian religious literature. The story, then, is in substance as follows. The goddess Nut, whom Plutarch identifies with Rhea, was the daughter of Shu and Tefnut. She is the wife of Seb, also known as Saturn, and the mother of Ra, or Helios, also known as the sun. Now, if we're to trust Plutarch, she afterwards becomes the wife of Ra, or the sun. Nut is unfaithful to Ra, who, discovering that she is with child by Seb, pronounces a curse upon her that she should not be delivered of her progeny in any month or year. Thoth, which is Hermes or Mercury, who is also in love with Nut, comes to her assistance with a stratagem. He plays at tables with the moon goddess, Selene, and wins from her the 70th part of each of her illuminations. And joining these parts together, he forms of them 5 days, which he adds to the calendar. Previous to that time, the Egyptian year consisted of 360 days, the exact number of degrees in a circle. Now, these 5 days being not part of any month or year, Ra was outwitted. You see, because upon these days, Nut brought forth her 5 children at different times in different places. Upon the first of these days, she brought forth Osiris, and the place of his birth, according to Diodorus, was Mount Nisa in Arabia, the Happy. Mount Nisa is now Mount Sinai, folks. At the moment of the birth of Osiris, a voice sounded throughout the world saying, quote, "The Lord of all the earth is born," unquote. On the second day, Nut gave birth to Aroros, the elder Horus. On the third day, Typhon or Set. On the fourth day, Isis. And on the fifth and last day, Nephthys. The Egyptians, therefore, regard the 5 days, which they term the epact or superadded, as the birthdays of the gods, especially venerating the fourth of them upon which the benevolent goddess Isis came into being. Plutarch, further on, announces that the 5 children of Nut were not all of the same father, thus contradicting his earlier statement. For he says that Osiris and the elder Horus were the children of Ra, that Isis was the daughter of Thoth, and only Typhon and Nephthys were actually the offspring of Seb. There is another, an even more recondite legend regarding the elder Horus, which denies him the fathership of Ra, declaring him to be the offspring of Osiris and Isis, while they were still in the womb of Nut. Now, these accounts we shall consider later. Osiris was given to Pamelis to be educated, and having come to the years of majority, became the king of Egypt. In this high capacity, Osiris applied himself to the civilizing of his nation, turning the Egyptians from their previously indigent and barbarous course of life to a happy and community existence. He taught them agriculture, compiled for them a body of laws for the regulation of conduct, instructed them in the reverencing and worship of the gods, thus establishing Egypt in all the essentials of truth, according to the legend. And having brought his own nation to prosperity and enlightenment, Osiris traveled over the rest of the world, converting peoples to his disciplines, not by force, but the persuasion of reason. Osiris was accompanied on this journey by a procession of nymphs and other superphysical beings who filled the air with music and song. In the meantime, Typhon, brother or half-brother of Osiris, had ambition to usurp the throne, but the vigilant Isis, sister-wife of Osiris, was too watchful. Typhon, however, having persuaded 72 other persons to join him in his conspiracy, with the aid of a certain queen in Ethiopia named Aso, perfected a plot against Osiris. He fashioned a chest exactly to the measurement of the body of Osiris, which chest he caused to be brought into the banquet hall, where the princes of Egypt were feasting their king's return. Typhon, simulating jest, promised this elaborately ornamented box to the one whose body, upon trial, most nearly fitted it. Now each of the princes, in turn, lay down in the box, but each was too short or too tall, until last of all, Osiris himself lay down in it. Immediately, the 72 conspirators rushed to the box, clamped the cover upon it, fastened it with nails, and poured melted lead over all the cracks and crevices. After this, they carried the chest to the bank of the Nile and cast it into the river where it joins the sea. Now this evil deed was executed upon the 17th day of the Egyptian month of Athyr, when the sun was in Scorpio. According to some, it was in the 28th year of the reign of Osiris.